From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast, is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision?
Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all.
Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI.
Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow.
Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casual and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
From UFOs to psychic powers and government conspiracies, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know. A production of iHeartRadio.
Hello, welcome back to the show. My name is Matt. Our colleague Noel is not joining us today, but will be returning soon.
They call me Ben. We're joined today with our guest producer, Max Friday to the Max Williams. Most importantly, you are here, and that makes this the stuff they don't want you to know. We're recording on a Friday, as far as calendars tell us, and it's also a Friday in 2022. Again, if you believe the official chronology, maybe that's a little too much deep water first. Matt, you know, we've talked about it for years and years and years over our time together on this show. History is often painted as a series of events set in stone, right? In the case of archaeology, that's quite literally what it is. But if you think about it, history is an ongoing conversation, and every single year we find more and more discoveries that can redefine humanity's view of the days and the years and the millennia that came before. And I don't know about you, man, but before, I know we both spent a lot of time before this show reading about things like this and looking at, you know, anachronistic artifacts like the Antikythera mechanism and so on. But until we embarked on the show together, I had no idea how controversial different aspects of the historical narrative can be.
Oh, yeah, controversial indeed. I think I had that same belief. Okay, we know history because people did write it down. There were records. It didn't matter if a town got sacked, right, or an entire empire went down. There was still a recorded record of each one of those events and when it happened and who it happened to. And then you start to question things because the bottom gets knocked out sometimes. Like, imagine you're in history class and for the first time you learn about the Julian calendar and how late in our timeline that was actually implemented, and then how it got changed again. I mean, it's pretty intense to think that we've only been keeping track of years the way we understand them for a couple of hundred years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there are still multiple calendars in use today. The Gregorian calendar, the Islamic calendar, Chinese, Julian, as you mentioned, the Jewish calendar, Indian calendar, North Korea has its own as well. And oftentimes, you know, one thing you can say about people,
people are not perfect, but people know how to make stuff work. And that's why you may have many different cultures wherein people adhere to a calendar for one part of their life and they adhere to a calendar for another part. So you may, for instance, you may be of the Muslim faith, right? And so you will use the Islamic calendar for things like Ramadan, right? For other high holy days. But when it comes to your day job, you're just going to say September or December, like the rest of the business world. And this is something people have made work, but everybody knows the system is imperfect. Everybody knows that history has a bunch of warts and wrinkles and unanswered questions. Quite possibly, history has some conspiracies. Spoiler, the answer is yes, it does. But we're going to talk about one today that will be of immense interest to anybody who remembers our old episodes on Phantom Time. This is something related but distinct. It's something called the new chronology. Here are the facts. As much as it sounds like an event in the DC Comics universe, it's a real thing. The new chronology is really the story of, I would say, one mathematician. He's our protagonist here.
Well, yeah, the primary, quote, new chronology, unquote, that we're talking about today, because there are others, was formed in the mind of a man named Anatoly Timofeevich Fomenko. Very interesting character, very smart character. He was born in the USSR, the Soviet Union, in 1945.
Mm-hmm. And before you hear anything else about this guy or his ideas, you need to know just what Matt said. It is crucial to remember, he is a very, very smart man. He is brilliant. He may not be familiar to many of us outside of Russia or people who are not professional mathematicians, but he is a mathematician. He's a Russian of note. He's an artist. He is teaching today. He was the son of an industrial engineer and a instructor in literature and Russian language. So he came from eggheads. And very quickly, Matt, this guy showed an enormous aptitude for math. He was winning multiple math competitions by the time he was in high school or secondary school, they would call it there. And I was not aware until we dug into the research that he was also a science fiction writer. He published his first story when he was just 14.
Yeah, dude. It was awesome, too. It was called The Mystery of the Milky Way. It sounds like a 14-year-old wrote it. Just the Milky Way doesn't sound that exciting. But it is cool that that's kind of, you know, it's where we are. And the fact that he wrote it when he was 14 years old, major props.
And to be clear, he's more well-known as a mathematician and an author of different works, which he considers nonfiction.
Yes. Well, he considers them studies, right? I mean, studies in history. And in a weird way, almost like mathematics proofs, kind of, or at least they're based on mathematics proofs in a way.
Yeah, yeah. He's heavily into statistics, if you ask him. He graduated from Moscow State University in 1967. And just 2 years later, he gets a job working at Moscow State University. He was good enough that the university didn't want to lose him. If you fast forward through the decades, 1992, he becomes the head of the differential geometry department at Moscow State University. What we're saying is he's got his stripes. If you were a mathematician in Russia, you were very much aware of this guy. He has edited many journals in his field. He's been on numerous overseeing councils. This is where he is part of a group when someone defends their dissertation to earn their, you know, PhD. And he even won the State Prize of the Russian Federation, which was a huge civilian honor in 1996 due to his work in math. But we're not here to talk about his impressive math career. We just wanted to give those props before we tell you today's story. You see, fellow conspiracy realists, as the years wended on, something began to bug our pal A.T. Fomenko.
Yeah. And it kind of just came into his life randomly, it seems. He was taking a look at the mathematics behind the motion of the sun, a thing that he calls coefficient D in his book. And he was looking at basically tracking the moon's motion if you follow it backwards in time as it's been going around the Earth, right? And he was looking at the work of another mathematician that was trying to just follow that motion and really trace it out over time, like going as back as far as you possibly could. And that mathematician that he was following and watching the work of came up with this massive error in time. Well, it was an error in where the moon should have been, basically. And once he saw that, he started going down a rabbit hole. Yeah, like a real, real rabbit hole.
If this is true, then what else is true, right? That's the basis of so much great investigation. That's also the basis of good storytelling, I would just want to note. So hopefully you'll see some of that in an upcoming holiday episode. No spoilers, folks. Yeah, you describe it perfectly, man. In the years leading up to the 1980s, Fomenko becomes increasingly certain that these realizations he's made, these mathematical, astronomical discoveries, have exposed a dangerous, vast, and profound discrepancy in the known historical record. And he wasn't being a jerk about it. He was just on the trail, you know? He was just sniffing out, if this is true, what then, kind of things. And he eventually concluded that historical events, as we know them, just do not correspond with the official dates when they were supposed to happen. Now, to be clear, he is not denying that certain things happened. He thought all the big tent events in the human record did occur at some point, just not when everyone claimed they did. And he's doing this all while he's a working academic. In 1981, he starts publishing what would become a massive, incredibly controversial theory in a massive, incredibly long series of books. The first book is called History, Fiction or Science? Dating Methods as Offered by Mathematical Statistics, Eclipses, and Zodiacs, parentheses, Chronology, Book One.
Just book one. That's just book one.
Just book one.
Ben, you found a PDF copy in English that we were able to go through a little bit. I think you went through maybe the whole thing. I just scratched the surface, but my goodness, it's big.
Yeah, it's big. And if you, just to give you a sense, if you have ever gone to a museum and you go to their gift shop and you see the different books they have, they're often like beautifully illustrated books on history, art, or some realm of the sciences. And you'll see that they're written in a two column format because there's so much information that needs to be put on the page. This is one of those things. It's that kind of approach, and it would prove to be an opening salvo in what some of Fomenko's critics call, and some of his fans call, a war on history. Let's see, right now, Matt, there are seven books in the series, and they're all saying, they're all looking at different ways to support the argument that most of the ancient history you have heard of is not ancient at all. This is the new chronology, folks, and spoiler alert, you'll want to strap in. Here's where it gets crazy. All right, top claim. This is the top claim. Some people might turn off the episode when they hear this, but please bear with us. A.T. Fomenko 100% believes the written history of humankind only goes back as far as what we would call 800 CE.
Yeah. That's not very far back at all. 800 CE? Come on. I mean, if you think back to ancient Egypt, ancient Greece, really all of the ancient world, all the ancient history.
It's ancient just, China, the life of Jesus Christ.
But here's the thing. He's not throwing that out. Like, none of that happened. Just what you said, Ben. It's just he's folding it in on itself, like closer to us in time.
Yeah. It's so Phantom Time, as longtime listeners will remember, is this argument that a lot of the Middle Ages just didn't happen. And please check out our work on that to learn more. This is different because Fomenko is saying, okay, good hustle, everybody who ever looked into history before, but it started in 800 AD, he would call it, or 800 CE, it's called now. And then for the next 200 years, he says, modern people know almost nothing about what was going on, and that most known historical events, the construction of the pyramids, right, the life and times of your favorite religious figures, they all happened sometime between the year 1000 and the year 1500.
Yeah. It seems like a whole lot happened in 500 years. Like a lot.
Yeah. And interestingly enough, I don't think either of us put this in the notes. He finds a lot of stuff to be flawed in his opinion, but then he finds other things to be true. He is a big proponent of the Book of Mormon because he believes that when interpreted correctly, it further proves the case of the new chronology. So what does that mean? You mentioned the Roman Empire. You mentioned ancient Egypt. Like, that's what?
Oh, yes. I did mention the Roman Empire. And that's because Fomenko believes something very interesting that, man, I want, like, my mind is only beginning to understand. But he believes that the Roman Empire didn't come around until the late Middle Ages. And, you know, this concept that Roman Empire, in my mind, goes back to the Greek, ancient Greece and the empire that was occurring there. But he believes that ancient Rome didn't happen. Ancient Greece, it was not real. It wasn't what we think it is. And even ancient Egypt is not, it just didn't exist as we understand them in the stories that we've been told.
Yeah, they all happened in the Middle Ages and the names were changed. And he says, look, Jesus Christ, the actual facts, as our pal Lauren Vogelbaum would say, Jesus Christ was real. The only thing is that what that guy lived and died in the 12th century. And he says that traditional chronology is just too long, you know, which honestly is a thing a lot of history students might agree with. This is just too much.
It's just too long. For readers of his book.
or some readers of his book, maybe being diplomatic here, he doesn't necessarily say that people were trying to erase history on purpose. He leaves that relatively open. He says that historians who came before him or came after these events either accidentally or maliciously made phantom copies of events or rulers and repeated them over and over again, the same stories under different names.
Well, and it's interesting to see, at least from what I've read, and maybe correct me if I'm wrong, Ben, but the reason why they might do that. He believes that these historians were maybe creating these histories in this timeline to support the goals of governments or, you know, people in power and regimes. It does seem that way.
And that's also a plausible thing, right? Because we know that if you look at all the contemporary or near contemporary stuff written about rulers who had fallen out of power, then all of a sudden they become villains. That's why so many Roman emperors have contradictory stories about them, right? We're not saying those emperors were all Dudley Do-Rights. We're just saying that there was a bit of propaganda and a bit of political motivation for these things.
But could that go all the way, you know, to creating false histories of entire empires?
Exactly. Could the Temple of Solomon really just be the Hagia Sophia by another name? Could the biblical Solomon really just be Sultan Suleiman the Magnificent? I mean, he has, he matches the names of multiple historical figures to other historical figures. And he also draws a lot of this out. Like, he, because he's an artist, he'll illustrate these connections, which are interesting and pretty confusing. Dare I say, Byzantine in their complication. This is a terrible joke. But he says, you know, the actual Christ inspired a bunch of other people who are more or less phantoms, historical accidents. It reminded me of back in our video days, you know, we would talk a lot about artifacts, right? Artifacts, not in the physical sense, but what is an artifact in the world of video, Matt?
An artifact in the world of video? Are you talking about just like digital, like garbled digital signal, essentially, where you just have on your screen a couple of blocks that aren't doing what they're supposed to be doing as far as color and contrast?
Yeah, I think that's a pretty good comparison to what he thinks that with that comparison, people like Pope Gregory the VII are just the equivalent of those sorts of artifacts. They're mistakes. And all of our traditional history, again, per Famenko, consists of mistakes like this. The same events repeated multiple times under different names. The Trojan War is the same thing as the Crusades. It was fought in revenge for the crucifixion. Let's see. Imperial Rome was Constantinople. He thinks there are like four different things that have been called Rome mistakenly. It just, it goes on and on and on. And it would, on it, like, if we were to go over each comparison he makes, our time would be better spent asking you to just read his seven books, despite some of the translation problems, right? So this is a lot already. This is a big thing to lump on people. When we talked a little bit about how he thinks this all actually happened, but let's maybe revisit there, because you pointed out something really great at the top, Matt. He didn't make this up out of whole cloth.
No, it goes back to the moon initially, right? This guy named Robert Newton that Famenko was just checking out. And that's the guy who was studying the moon and how it was moving. And he said, hey, there's errors here in these older dates. I wonder what's going on with these eclipse dates. Seems like they're off. And then after looking at the work of Newton, he looked at the work of a person named N.A. Morozov. That's probably just the easiest way for us to remember him, Morozov. And this is another renowned Russian scientist. This guy had analyzed ancient dates, and he claimed that a ton of them need to be changed or revised, at least in some way, because there were errors.
Right. And as we'll see, that's something that is not foreign to the world of history, right? Mm-hmm. There have been multiple instances, especially in earlier history, where you will have experts discovering a new fossil, for example. And that may be earth-shaking, but it's not necessarily controversial because everyone can agree, hey, if the carbon dating, for instance, tells us this, right, and it jibes with some other things we know, then let's revise what we our official understanding. That's how science works. There's nothing wrong with that.
Ben, I'm remembering. It was Newton found that there were errors in studying the moon's coefficient D, and the errors were between the centuries of the 8th century and the 10th century. And when Famenko looked at that data, then he looked at what Morozov was saying about dates that needed to be revised. He put those two sets together and found that the dates of eclipses as Morozov would revise them to actually made the math of Newton work.
That's, yes, yeah.
Which is fascinating, mm-hmm. Right?
Fascinating and feels like strong support, you know? So Fomenkov believes that this vast overarching conspiracy is the result of multiple generations of scholars often making honest mistakes, or possibly also bad faith actors perpetrating a big lie because, and we'll see why this is funny at the end, because it better suits their view of how the world should be. So he's accusing them of a little bit of confirmation bias, quite possibly. And if you look through his work, what you'll see basically is that he believes there were originally four sources of historical knowledge. He refers to these books as A, B, C, and D. Those latter three, B, C, and D, he argues, are imperfect copies of A, which he calls the true history. Here are the capital letters on true history there. So he says, over time, these four sources got copied and recopied so much, so often, through multiple translations that they became garbled. And the four books were eventually assumed to be four separate histories rather than what they were, three flawed copies of one narrative for a total of four things saying different versions of the same story.
Whoa, but it's like they were just going back further and further in time somehow. It reminds me of the old game of telephone that you always talk about, Ben, how history is a palimpsest and we're just like writing over everything again and telling it to each other over and over and trying to be as accurate as possible. It's tough for me to maybe internalize some of that because we are writing it down often. And even in the explanation of Fomenko, these are scholars theoretically writing it down. But it does make sense to me when you're talking about translation specifically. The only thing is we're talking numbers here, right?
Right, right. So Roman numerals, Arabic numbers, those are often, I would want to say, less vulnerable to translation. But then we have to add the second ingredient, which you mentioned earlier, which is the idea that political factors or social factors might influence the way something is translated. And that's not necessarily bad. That doesn't necessarily mean it's propaganda. It could mean that people have a different cultural framework when they're translating this thing, when they're writing something down. This is the golden goose to Fomenko. He says when these scribes in late medieval eras were writing history down, they accidentally just made it four times longer than it should have been, and they've been repeating the same history four times. And as proof of this, he says, look, I've found these similarities. They're in different purported periods of human history, but they're all the same thing. And more importantly, he argues, this discovery puts me in a place where I and my colleagues can reconstruct the true history by collapsing the four histories into what they always were, just a few hundred years. That's a Matrix moment, at least, if it's true. I propose we take a break for a word from our sponsors, and let's take a look at his methods. What do you say?
Let's do it.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Snagajob is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On-demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Today I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward. Inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
And we're back. Okay, let's go about figuring out how these four separate books of history that are too long, obviously, in collapsing them down into one historical record that occurred in the Middle Ages, basically. How did Fomenko and his team do this? Well, Fomenko didn't just, you know, look at all the works of previous people and just kind of take them and write them down as his own. Instead, he came up with theories that lean on his background, mathematics. He's looking at statistical correlation. He's looking at the mathematics of astronomy, which are, you know, pretty dang reliable. The big floating things, you know, around us. And what the sun does and the moon and the earth. And he also looked at comparisons of past timelines that rulers used. So people that were known to be emperors or kings, what did they use? It's really interesting.
Yeah. And although it's, you know, I even more than most hate the deification of human beings who happen to be in power, it does make sense, I have to admit, to look to the timelines of time and power, right, by ruling figures throughout history, because they are going to be the people who are most likely to be noted in recorded history, right? You can't write down the first and last name or first and family name of everybody who lives in some ancient empire, but you will be much more likely to find information about the people who ruled and when they ruled, for how long. So
Ben, I just started up Skyrim again, and I just joined the Bard's College in Solitude.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And you have to do this quest where you find the last verse of King Olaf, which is fascinating because it's a history written about him. But in this case, it's kind of scratched out. So the head of the Bard's College has to make up some verses and just writes history in the moment with you in the game. It's pretty great.
I'm going to speak for our guest producer, Max, here and say, I think you made both of our days when you mentioned Skyrim. How long has it been since you played it?
Years. It was Xbox 360 is the last time I played it. So now I'm just bringing it back up. I don't care. Man. It's awesome.
It's so great. I turned it on recently and realized I I'm not bragging. I feel like this is a bad thing. I got 100% completion. So now it's just Radiant Quest and I just walk around. Now it's basically Animal Crossing for me.
Whew, I've People never just done 100%. Ask me,
you shouldn't. You really should turn back. You know what I mean? Just do the main storyline. What kind of character do you have? What's your build?
A straight up barbarian healer. He's badass.
Nice. Okay, so we've got to talk more about Skyrim, but that's how amazing that game is, folks, because I can't believe it. You're right. The Bard History Olaf quest is kind of one-to-one with what we're talking about. So, yeah, some of Fomenko's critics may say that he's just writing his own stuff, right, to replace what is unknown. But what he's doing is more what we could call Fomenko parallelism. And if you search for that on your browser of choice, you will see those multiple examples of what we're talking about, where he says, well, this thing that's called this is really this other thing with a different name. But if you think about it, they're the same. And he says, you know, the Star of Bethlehem, as described in the as described in the Christian Bible, is actually the Crab Nebula, which was recorded by Chinese astronomers around 1150 CE.
Oh, because there was a supernova that formed that thing that was super bright and stuck around for a while.
Exactly, exactly. And then Fomenko spends a lot of time proving or attempting to prove star positions. So back to astronomy, right? This is an example of, you know, what you said earlier. Let me lean on my acumen as a mathematician, right? And now he says, all right, let's go back to Ptolemy. And Claudius Ptolemy has recorded star positions, and the rest of history agrees that he recorded these positions somewhere between 100 and 170 CE. But he says, actually, if you do the math, this guy's charting stellar locations from 600 to 1300 CE. And he's done the same thing with Egyptian horoscopes.
Yeah. I just don't understand how most of history agrees that it's a 70-year time period that those star charts, you know, were made, right? And then Fomenko believes, oh no, they're actually done from 600 to 1300 AD. You know, just 700 years. It's fine. Which I guess it would mean, again, it's like, in that case, he's expanding time rather than folding it in, right?
Yes. Yeah, that's... That is an interesting point. There are a few things that at least seem contradictory in this guy's stuff, right? And this leads us to another contradiction. He also says that astronomical observations that don't jibe with his theory are either incorrect or irrelevant. So ancient Chinese astronomical observations outside of things like the Crab Nebula, are useless. Babylonian observations are likewise incorrect. They also don't happen to jibe with the theories of new chronology.
But that's weird, because then you'd have to decide that, you know, human beings that looked up in the sky and made star charts, you know, in those areas of the world were just lying or just were really bad at doing it. Or we're making it up for some reason. That's just an odd stance to take. Okay, well, let's keep going.
Let's keep going, because it goes past the astronomy. We also said he correlates lists of rulers, earthly rulers, and this forms a big, big part of new chronology in general. So he'll take a list of kings from one country, or emperors, or whatever, and then he will compare that to a list of rulers from another country, and then he will show similarities, right, that he believes proves these are actually the same list.
Well, it's almost like he's taking from different centuries too, right?
Oh, almost doesn't cover it. Yeah, he's doing right. Different centuries, yeah.
So yeah, different parts of the world and in different timelines, and then he's correlating them together. With like, oh, well, that's actually just this ruler repeated up here in the timeline. It's really strange. He quote proved that the biblical kings of Israel are just the Western Roman emperors somehow. And I don't understand that. I haven't looked, honestly, I haven't looked too deep into that, Ben. That sounds nuts to me. But okay.
And the Anglo-Saxon kings of England are just other names for the Byzantine emperors. And they're only associated with England because refugees from Constantinople, now Istanbul, that's nobody's business but the Turks, from Constantinople, modern-day Istanbul, fled to England after the city was sacked in 1453. So if you are an enthusiast of Anglo-Saxon history, then it might sound like this guy is erasing your history, right? Because he kind of is. This is where a lot of people, in fact, take deep issue with his claims. You can find examples of his technique as well as the problems with it. I want to give a special shout out to Jason Colavito, who talks through this. It gets so granular, folks. It gets so in the weeds of genealogy. If you're one of those people who had to read the Old Testament at some point in your life, Madam Aline, on you here, what's the book of the Old Testament where it's just a whole bunch of people begatting each other?
I can't remember, but it's in there. Just flip through until you see
begat. So-and-so begat, who begat, who begat, who begat, who begat, drop the beat, begat, begat, right? So, like, it's heavily genealogical, right? And in each case, he seems to find what he thinks of as, what he presents as quantitative proof that these are really just four iterations of the same actual historical person. And he's been accused of playing fast and loose with this because he will draw, I don't know, he'll also draw conclusions from things that could just be historical coincidences or, I don't know, Bob Ross style happy accidents.
And let's just give some more examples here. Fomenko argues that a lot of the confusion that modern history has about some of these actual dates in time, you know, as he sees them, actually come from Old English. Old English. Isn't that a beer? I don't know. Not that.
I think it is. I think it's like a 40-ounce, like a malt liquor.
Yeah. That's what it's the image that conjured in my mind. But it's not because of that beer. It's because of Old English use of this term, quote, year of grace. And it was used as a synonym for Anno Domini or AD.
Ah, yeah. And he extrapolates to something like this. And again, there's translation, not the original Russian. Maybe the original and now forgotten meaning of a formula, years of grace, differs from one which is accepted today. Maybe it was years in Greece, Greek years, or something like this.
Huh. Solid?
No. I guess, you know, if it's 3 a.m. in the dorm room and we're passing around the bong, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. That doesn't seem like it has much of a foundation to me, but, you know, okay. But I get it. Translation, I understand his contention that translation is a major issue.
But, yes.
And if you're not talking about numbers, in this case, you're talking about a term to describe either an era or maybe even a certain number. Like maybe it's a phrase that could represent a number. I could see how that would be possibly contentious. But who knows? I know the whole leap year thing was a major issue, right? I mean, we don't have to get into it fully, Ben, but figuring out how to change the calendar and how many days to add to a calendar to make the year work out or to catch up in days. Like it's been a whole thing throughout human history. Like wasn't there one year that had 440 something days? And it was like right before Julius Caesar was assassinated. He added like 2 months to the calendar or something.
I love it. I feel like that's such a power move, you yeah. know? I don't think it works out all the time for those rulers, right? Look at the French Revolution's attempt to make a new calendar. But I think we can all accept this supposition about translation in this case is interesting, but maybe not enough. Maybe it's not solid enough to justify rewriting the entirety of history. Okay, so we have the basics and we have a rough understanding of his methods, controversial as they may be. But the next question is, what's the motivation? Why? That's where it gets even stranger. So we're going to take a pause for a word from our sponsors. We're going to return and we're going to throw a lot of stuff into the mix here.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snag a Job's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Today I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward. Inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
All right, we're back. As you might have assumed, Fomenko's concepts are largely dismissed by mainstream academia. And you know, that includes mainstream academics in Russia. Most of the non-Russian public would probably dismiss this, but the motivation is one thing, and he implies this, doesn't say it plainly. The dominant power in Europe and Asia for the entirety of human history was a Slavic Turkic empire he calls the, quote, Russian horde. Matt, Genghis Khan was Russian. So are Scythians, Huns, Goths, Ukrainians, any other Central Asian tribe mentioned ever. Moscow was the third Rome. It came after Alexandria and Constantinople, which were also mistakenly called Rome. The Russian horde spread across the world under the reign of Genghis Khan. Everything seems carefully designed to make this alternative narrative in which Russia has always been the one true superpower of human history.
Oh, okay. Now I'm starting to understand Fomenko's thing. So if Russia was actually the one true power, then all these other empires that were built up with their kings and all that stuff, they wouldn't have the type of hegemony that they currently have in the world. If you think about the Britons, the Frances, you know, the real Western world, it wouldn't be the most powerful thing ever.
Right. Yeah. So the idea is that other groups like the Vatican, the Holy Roman Empire, and even the forces behind the Protestant Reformation wrote these fake histories to hide the real magnificence of what he calls the Russian horde, so that modern day Russians and the world don't recognize their true worth and stay alienated from other places in Central Asia. So Russia is the font from which all culture springs, per Fomenko. Might surprise you to know, folks, his books have sold over a million copies, well over a million. They've been translated to other languages, including English. Found a survey that said somewhere up to 30% of Russians today are kind of sympathetic with the idea. They say, I don't know, people in authority lie all the time. Why wouldn't they lie about this? He's got a lot of supporters.
Yeah, well, and the concept that someone else is trying to destroy your history is very unifying, right?
That will
make you come together. So in a way, his goal or his beliefs are kind of fueling the goal. It's a circular thing, much like the moon circling around the earth.
There it is. There it is. So it's also true that Fomenko And his theories would probably never have been near as well known were it not for one of his most famous former supporters, the chess legend Garry Kasparov, who said, you know, he talked with Fomenko when they met and formed a relationship in the 1990s. And he said, you know, we got a lot in common. I also am skeptical about history. Kasparov would later go on to say he doesn't agree with Fomenko's conclusions, like that, the way in which Fomenko reconstructs history. But he says, I am skeptical of the official narrative in several key points. And again, there's nothing necessarily wrong with that. You just have to prove it. We should also mention Fomenko's not the only new chronology guy out there. There are a couple of other things that have the same term applied to them, and they're much more Western, like the Glasgow chronology and David Rohl, R-O-H-L, right?
Yeah, and you can look both of those up. Glasgow chronology, G-L-A-S-G-O-W. Check that out. It's something that came around in the 1970s. I mean, you'll see that it was kind of not really debunked, but even the people that came up with the concept threw it away, like right after they came up with it, because they're just like, nah. But the David Rohl thing, all another quote new chronology, worth your time. Check that out. It deals a lot with Egypt, I believe.
Yeah. And the idea is essentially down dating, like moving a timeline around. In his case, he's lowering a traditionally understood timeline of ancient Egypt by about 350 years. And this might seem, you know, like small beans to a lot of people who are not Egyptologists, but it's a big deal. And if you want to learn more about the controversy there, if you want to learn the basis of his claims, you can read books that he's written, or you can check out a documentary that came out in 2015 or so. But realize that it is controversial. It's not accepted by most Egyptologists today. Really, what we should think about is, what's the point of all of this? What we're seeing is so many people feel unsatisfied by history. And why do they feel it needs to be rewritten to create a more personally satisfying view of the past? I think in a lot of cases, it can be explained through confirmation bias, especially if you're a nationalist and you say, my culture is, or my nation or whatever, is not getting its due. Let me tell you a story about a world in which it does get the recognition it deserves. You know, like, it reminds me, honestly, of some religious sects like Nation of Islam, or, you know, also Nazis, right, with their weird, horrific thing. Or, you know, the popular belief that you'll find in other parts of the world arguing that modern humanity originated in China, which is accepted as fact, you know, and to a degree that might surprise Westerners.
You were right. I think you said this, Ben. Every hero needs an origin story, right? And if you feel like your country, your nation, your whatever, your empire is the hero in the story, then it needs an epic start. Like, how did it begin and why? And the bigger that you can make that story, the more awesome you are now, right? So it that kind of checks out to me. I am puzzled, I think, as to how this person Fomenko, who does appear on the page to be so brilliant and have a grasp of concepts that I cannot fathom, how does that person go so deep down what appears to be a rabbit hole to me of, like, making things fit when he's trying so hard to use math to prove things?
Yeah. And it's something that, unfortunately, it's a tendency you can see in humanity pretty commonly. You know, a lot of great thinkers who are responsible for many, many innovations also have their own personal interest in things that would be considered way out there to their colleagues. I'm thinking of, like, Newton and alchemy, you know. That's another great example. But this is a little more modern world stuff. A.T. Fomenko is alive today. And maybe that's where we end. The big question is he open to constructive criticism about his theories? That's another fundamental brick in the temple of science. Well, we do know in 2004, his English language publisher did something interesting. They said, hey, we're going to have a contest. If you can prove the existence of any human artifact from before 1000 CE, we will give you $10,000.
Okay. You can go to a museum and find that, right?
Right. Well, they do have one caveat. You can't submit anything using archaeological, dendrochronological, paleographical, or carbon dating methods.
Well, then how would I prove that it's from that time period?
Yeah, that's a good question, man, because those are the universally accepted methods for proving the age of
It's got a Sharpie written on it. It just says 999 CE.
I mean, that's okay. That's the thing, though, because, you know, if this was true, it would inherently, fundamentally change our understanding of human history. I think it's safe to say it's probably not true just because of the discrepancies in the work compared to the work of everybody else, right? But even if this theory can be debunked, we have to remember that for a period of time, knowledge of ancient history was only kept around by a very small number of scholars and also theologians who definitely had like an agenda, right? But they were the only members of the literate class. They were the only ones with the books who could read them. You know what I mean?
And it is very weird to think about how far spread groups of those human beings were that were in towers somewhere protected with all their, you know, papyrus and tablets and papers, gathering all that stuff together and everybody kind of writing their own thing on their own, not connected to everybody else.
And in the case of several orders of monks, they were probably drunk while they were doing it. But they were calling it, they were probably just calling it English back then, not Old English.
And they weren't getting thrown out for doing meth back then, or?
No, that's that's the temple in Thailand in the modern day. But who knows, give it a few centuries and maybe somebody will tell us the truth about how those events went down. That's our show for today, folks. We would love to hear your thoughts. Right now, it's safe to say that new chronology is not a widely accepted theory, and there are a lot of problems with it that we have outlined. But the idea of this vast conspiracy spanning millennia, really, is fascinating. And we want to know, what do you think? Is it possible that large portions of history have been excised from the records or fabricated? If so, how? More importantly, why? Let us know.
Yeah, you can find us everywhere, especially online. On Twitter, we're Conspiracy Stuff. On Facebook, Conspiracy Stuff. On Instagram, we are Conspiracy Stuff Show. And most importantly, honestly, y'all, YouTube, we are Conspiracy Stuff. Find us there. Hey, and maybe you don't like social media. That's cool. We understand. Do you like phones and your mouth?
If both of those things sound jolly good to you, then why not give us a call? Say it with us, 1-833-STDWYTK. You'll hear a familiar voice and a beep like so. Beep, that tells you you're in the right place. Then you will have 3 minutes. Those minutes are yours. Go nuts. Get weird with it. Give yourself that nickname you always wanted. We love monikers and appellations and AKAs. Tell us what's on your mind. And quick pro tip here, because we may occasionally call back for more information, why not save the number in your phone so it's not just a random series of digits calling you? Because you may be called upon. Most importantly, and I say this as a fan of reading, if you have a story that needs more than 3 minutes, don't hesitate to write it out. Send us the links. Send us the pictures. Let us walk to the front of the rabbit hole with you, and we will do the rest. All you have to do is shoot us a line at our good old-fashioned email address where we are.
Conspiracy@iHeartRadio.com.
Thank you.
Stuff They Don't Want You to Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.